Welcome to the brainstorm. Has Tesla just released the perfect car for America? And we've got Iridium finally being acquired here after a lot of speculation by Rocket Lab. And then Fable 5 released back into the wild. Brett, you are a Model X owner and advocate here. What do you think of the YL?
I think it's kind of, I still mourn the loss of the Model X, though I understand why they had to do it. The Falcon Wing doors were insanely expensive and complex. And I'm not sure, you know, ask my wife, she would say she would rather they didn't have the Falcon Wing doors. So why not give the 6-seat configuration, which people with a family need, where you have kind of these, you can slip into the back without having to climb over anything, without the Model X price or the crazy doors. And that's basically what they've delivered with the Model YL, as in it has almost the same like seating configuration as the best Model X, but it's in a Model Y package. So I think anybody with a family will love it. And yes, I'm like, I have a traditional Model Y and I'm like, oh, this looks like a clear upgrade. You know, particularly if I could transfer that FSD, which I don't think is in the cards, but that's the, that's my take.
And so what do you make of the fact, so this was originally launched in China, said that this was never coming to the US. I think our take was always, it's probably going to come to the US. Does this tell you anything about robotaxi timing or strategy there, or unrelated?
I would say semi-related. I mean, I think no matter what, you'll need a variety of form factors for a robotaxi. I think the CyberCab is going to be the dominant form factor. But, you know, if you have a family of 4 or 6 or 5, you know, you'll want to be able to call a taxi that can accommodate that many people. And so this could serve that purpose. It also, anything they can do to drive unit sales increases the potential fleet for robotaxi once it scales. And I do think that there was a gap in their lineup after they discontinued the Model X. When they made those comments about not bringing the YL to the US, that was back when I think the Model X was still in production. And Elon has indicated that even a 3-door type vehicle, something that's more, that can accommodate even more people more comfortably, could be in the cards in the future. And you have to imagine that like the future world of transport is kind of, you are getting the car you need at the time you need it for the purpose you need it, at least when you're hailing a robotaxi. And so I do think you'll have, like you could imagine this form factor, but you take out 2 of the seats and then you have a big wide flat space, that being a useful form factor for people who want to like lie down on an intra-city trip or something. Like, I think there are various ways that the platforms will be able to be manipulated to accommodate a robo-taxi world when it becomes like the reality that we think it's going to. And so it does not surprise me that they're thinking about kind of form factor and form factor diversification here. Sam, are you going to buy it?
I'm very tempted. Pure anecdote here. I called the Tesla showroom closest to me and I said, okay, can I come in, see how much cargo space this has, and, you know, check it out. Am I going to fit in the back seat if I need to squeeze back there? And the person answering sounded exasperated. They're like, so many people have called. we won't have it until late summer or early September for people in the showroom. So clearly, I think lots of demand out there. This is the most tempted I've been to own a car. And so it might just do it. It might just do it. All right, Daniel. Yeah. Iridium.
Yes.
Finally getting acquired after lots of speculation from other players. I think it's a natural fit here, but it was a surprise, I think, to a lot of people by who acquired it. So can you break down what happened and what you make of it?
Yeah, sure. So Iridium, for those of you who don't know, it's a satellite communications company. They've been around for decades. They have a constellation in low Earth orbit, and really their pitch is quite a niche service. It's really for a safety critical. They own a global bandwidth, which provides safety critical applications. So very, very low speed, but it can work almost around the clock in most weather conditions. And really the surprise to some people was who acquired them, which was Rocket Lab. So Rocket Lab, outside of SpaceX in China, is the most active launch provider in the world. They are working towards a medium lift rocket called Neutron, which will be partially reusable. And in the past, they have said their long-term ambition is to own their own satellite constellation, which they have dubbed Flatellite. And it's kind of rumored that it'll be akin to a Starlink-like service. But I think why this acquisition is quite notable is because Spectrum is a finite asset. We saw SpaceX acquire Spectrum from EchoStar last year, and more recently Amazon acquiring Globalstar for the same reason, for their ambitions for satellite constellation, Project Leo, and then now Rocket Lab acquiring Iridium. And I think from Rocket Lab's perspective, it makes most sense, particularly if you look at the launch market today. It's becoming increasingly more tight to get access to launch. Blue Origin's pad explosion has pushed them out by several months. 2 weeks ago, SpaceX, I think it was reported that they're not taking bookings on their rideshare from 2028, 2029. So to get the satellites to orbit, you need a rocket. So I think it's quite synergistic in that regard as it relates to an acquisition, and makes a lot of sense from Rocket Lab. It's likely going to accelerate their longer term constellation ambitions.
If I were to look at the asset and say, well, this asset has three things. It has satellites, it has bandwidth, and has subscribers.
Yes.
Maybe is that an accurate description of Iridium? And is that which of those three is Rocket Lab, like, makes it most valuable to Rocket Lab, or rank order them, actually?
I would say number one is probably bandwidth. Because, like I said, bandwidth's finite. You see other players acquiring them. You need it to operate your broadband constellation, but notably also direct to cell, which SpaceX and others are going after. And in fact, Iridium actually had its own direct to cell initiative, which was starting to take hold. I think they were trying to test by the end of this year or maybe early next year. And then second, I would say, is having constellations. Rocket Lab has in-house manufacturing capacity, and just getting all of the data from a constellation that's been up there for several years. You can learn the tricks of the trade, for lack of a better word. And then finally, it's just a subscriber. I mean, a big part of actually Iridium's business is providing services to the US government. And we know Rocket Lab, in the convergence of space and defense, has really been leaning into their defense initiatives recently. So likely synergistic there too, offering a lot of services to the US government. So I think all in all complementary, but probably in my opinion, most complementary is the access to the bandwidth, which is becoming, like I said, very, very rare nowadays. So I think it's quite opportunistic of Rocket Lab to see this acquisition and acquire it for roughly $8 billion in enterprise value.
And I think the key is not just direct to cell, direct to device.
Yes, right? Yes.
Direct to drones, I think, is going to be probably a big factor in the future here, as kind of a backup connectivity, or, you know, obviously jamming goes on, but having multiple solutions there is going to be interesting. Sorry, Brett, I saw you were about to chime in.
Well, is the world really going to be constrained for launch capacity as SpaceX is making the largest, biggest step change in launch capacity per rocket that's ever been considered, and then has plans for, you know, a launch cadence that would basically, like, cause a huge, huge surge in capacity?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know, Brett, you've done a lot of the work on, like, the ORRI. From SpaceX's perspective, it's a lot more lucrative to launch their own satellites. So assuming they prioritize that, it's very difficult for others to get in on it. And just, I think, a couple of months ago, Amazon itself came out and said, listen, we have capacity to produce X amount of satellites. We are producing more satellites than we can get access to launch, so we're going to have to slow down how many satellites we're producing. So when SpaceX's direct competitor is saying that as it relates to constellations, I think it's definitely a cry to the industry. And that was before the Blue Origin explosion, which was just a pretty large setback. Although I will say it looks like that they are making pretty rapid progress. I think Dave Limp, the CEO, posted on the 4th of July that they're still working around the clock. So they're very, very aggressively trying to launch towards the end of this year, although in my opinion that's still quite optimistic, but we'll see. It really comes down to how well they execute on rebuilding that pad.
But I do think it's I think it is people are might take issue with this. No one has sustainable demand except for SpaceX.
Sure,
there's companies that are doing Earth observation that have kind of found product market fit with defense. And defense certainly, I think, will be a growing category here. But so far, if you look at launch and why there's demand for launch, it's because SpaceX found a model that worked. And so far, everyone else is just throwing satellites at it to try and find something that fits. But I don't think there's... If SpaceX stopped launching satellites, it's not like there's another 10,000 satellites ready to go that are funded.
Yeah. I don't know. And it also highlights the... Oh, go ahead, Brett.
No, go on, Daniel.
I was going to say, just like really highlights the importance of vertical integration, to your point, Sam. Like SpaceX is making their own demand. They have all their facilities in-house. And really, without that, they wouldn't have the cash flow machine that is Starlink, which is then funding its big rocket, as Brett says, the one that's going to wipe out the industry, supposedly.
Right. Well, I don't know. I mean, as we model like the Starship stack, there's a lot of slack in the model in time for them to commercialize the full big rocket, and then time to get the top stage consistently reusable, and then time to get it consistently reusable and turning quickly. And so, though they are not taking reservations for 28, 29, I would expect that they will keep Falcon 9 operating until they have Starship consistently going. Yeah. Once Starship is consistently going, Starlink is... They're going to have so much upmass they're pushing via Starlink that they'll have some slack in the system, I think, natural, like, you know, just on a percentage basis. And so they'll begin taking Pez dispenser kind of like rocket slots. Now, you know, designing to the Pez dispenser is another, like, something that these satellite companies will have to commit to in some way. And so insofar as SpaceX is not like out there being like, this is how much capacity is out there for this thing, I think people are going to hold back on saying we're going to commit to that. And so I do think that there's this medium term like crunch where companies that were designing for the Falcon 9 shell, well, now maybe the Falcon 9 is not going to be available. And then Blue Origin just blew up its big rocket. And so, you know, there's reasons to totally believe kind of like the industry stance. And at least as in our model, by early 2030s, you have wild amounts of capacity. And I think to Sam's point, it's unclear, like, what plugs in there other than a competing low Earth orbit communications constellation. I don't know, you know, I mean, and some Department of Defense stuff, you know, which can be big, but it's like kind of choppy. So,
all right, Brett, Fable 5, back in the wild. Have you semi in the wild, in a caged, in a zoo?
Backburning tokens.
You can visit it. You can visit it.
Yes. You talk to it like via the phone and the plexiglass thing in the way. Yeah. And then if you say like a forbidden word, then like the glass blacks out and then unblacks. And there's like a doofy person behind the glass that's not the actual Fable 5 wearing a Fable 5 mask. That's technically how it works.
What I would say, the impressions that I'm seeing from people are very positive, though. It's like certainly a lot of frustration in getting downgraded in safeguarded, but the capability, as expected, is blowing people's minds. Have you tested it out?
I mean, I tested it before it got nerfed the first time, and it was clearly capable. I was trying to work on a particular complex problem, and it actually lost a head-to-head against GPT Pro. But I think I generally trust that, you know, people who are coding with it believe that it's better. And I think people are running, if you are coding with it and the project that you're working on has anything to do with anything they don't want you working on, then it'll happily kind of like, you know, cut you off. I think that the more important from an industry perspective is the fact that this was not caged forever just for doling out to, you know, friends of the administrations. And so I would expect that GPT 5.6, which... You know, yes, it has a frontier model that's similarly capable to Mythos, now called Fable, but it also has a medium class model that's half the cost of their best in class model today. And for a lot of users, I think that's a more meaningful like shift. So if you kind of basically are getting the same productivity uplift you're getting off of Codex or Cowork, but you can get it twice as quickly, half the cost, that'll drive a lot of volume. And so the fact that that's not going to also stay in kind of like a glass enclosed case, only available to those who are trusted, or at least foreseeable won't stay in that case, is very positive. And, you know, I think that there is an alternate universe where kind of in the interest of national security, these things were like, you know, held off and the public was prevented from getting access to them. I think that would have been very bad, not just for OpenAI and Anthropic and XAI down the road, but also bad for America generally in a battle with kind of like, you know, let's call it Chinese competitors that are, you know, looking over our shoulders to steal our work and then releasing it for free a year later, having not paid for the initial work.
And well, that ties into the discussion last week and maybe incremental news, Tesla limiting people inside the company to $200 of credits. A lot of anecdotes of people using open source and the importance of this cost frontier, not just performance frontier. Has your view on open source versus frontier model lab changed at all? Or you still think being at the frontier will extract the lion's share of profit?
Yeah, I think that the one within my framework is that the agentic type products are still wildly incapable relative to how good they could be. And even piercing through to that wildly incapable level, you know, yielded tens of billions of dollars in revenue. Now that tens of billions of dollars is coming out of somebody's budget. So naturally they're saying, well, okay, we're spending tens of billions of dollars here. Could we be spending just single digit billions of dollars? And hey, there are these, you know, quasi stolen methods by which we could get roughly the same output for much less. Let's do that. I think that kind of like budgeting discussion is happening. And by the way, you know, just if an enterprise has adopted Cowork at scale, just shifting those users onto Codex probably saves half to two thirds the cost and generates faster work output. So I think people will make that move as well. I think for now, like the best in class model will continue to yield kind of like actually most of the economic activity, because we're not, the market is not yet overserved, at least in even in general purpose knowledge work. And by overserved, I mean, the, you know, within kind of innovation theory, there's this idea that, you know, say you're a car maker, you focus on horsepower because you think people want to go as fast as possible. And that almost certainly was true at some point in the automotive industry, where it's like, gosh, you know, like I can only max out at 30 miles per hour. You know, that's pretty bad, you know? And so getting to 60 miles per hour, along with the infrastructure being built for 60 miles per hour, like was an appropriate direction for the technology to move. But like the supercar is now a niche object. It's not serving the broad market. And in fact, even, you know, if you look at like unit sales by horsepower, the belly of the curve is not up near the top end of the spectrum in terms of horsepower. And so the market can basically continue to develop something past where kind of the gross profit maximizing sweet spot is. But we're not there yet in AI. I'm strongly convinced of that, as in we all will want and need more intelligence in our lives and we'll be willing to pay for it, because lack of just basic, not even intelligence, like common sense in doing things, or, you know, is, you know, wildly apparent in everybody's lives if they've interacted with any bureaucratic agency. And it's apparent in even the agentic kind of like type coding tools and Cowork tools that exist today. So the way we think about it from a high level, if a software company, AI software, can deliver a 10x productivity advance on a knowledge worker using it, then the underlying company will be willing to pay 1/10 that price for the software tool. And if like all of these coding tools became 10x more powerful, made everybody 10x more powerful as knowledge workers, that modeling framework would yield around $30 trillion in annual spend for AI software, which lo and behold, that's what SpaceX AI details as its kind of like total addressable market for the software side. I mean, they do 26 trillion, but I'm sure they use
round,
somewhat similar methodology to get there. 4 trillion off.
Give or take a few billion.
So net I think that kind of like there's still going to be wild thirst for kind of like the next generation of models, and that's where the economic activity will come. The question on the Chinese side is, as these frontier model companies are restricting access to their Chinese competitors, as they are figuring out ways to stop, you know, the gray market in China of signing up for 25 different Claude accounts to extract their answers for a Chinese model developer, that could slow down the open source is probably the wrong, the open weight rate of development relative to the frontier. And so people are making this assumption that, oh, it's always 12 months behind and the gap is closing. I think it's inaccurate to say the gap is closing. And there's a reasonable assertion to be made that actually the gap is going to yawn open a bit here. We will see.
All right. That's all the innovation in roughly 20 minutes. We were told to keep it snappy. Last topic here. This is Monday, July 6th. Brett, Team USA, advancing or not?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I can tell you when we lose, it'll be because of
advancement.
No, when we lose, it'll be because of our goalkeeping. That's my, I think you saw it at the end of the last game. There's like little squishy moments there at the end. And I'm afraid to say that having a goalkeeper that has seen world-class shots many, 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 many times is an advantage. And the U.S. does not have that. Though I think Flo Balogun, you know, deserved to be freed. That was a sham of a red card, and they should have overturned the suspension. People are outraged by this. It's like you don't undo something when you can, when it was a clear mockery of the game to even make the call.
All right. Well, so Brett, singling out just the goalie. Matt, when you're done playing, come on and defend yourself. Daniel.
Listen, he's a better goalie than me, but there are better goalies. I will take Courtois
too soon,
over
Brett.
Matt Fries anytime.
Bring back Brad Friedel or Tim Herrod too. They're the two keepers I used to watch all the time. They're great.
There you go.
Brad Guzan. We got killed by Brad Guzan insisting on playing Android One Cup too, but yes. I always have problems with the goalkeepers, except Tim Howard. This is
Tim
the thing.
Howard, he was great.
Can you win if your goalkeeper gives up a goal on every five shots? When previously to even tie Belgium, we had to have our goalkeeper make 17 saves in a row and set a record. I think that's the question. This is a worse Belgium, and it's a better U.S. team with a worse goalkeeper.
Mm. Wow. All right. Exciting stuff. Good breakdown. That's our ESPN section. See everyone next week.
ARK Investment Management LLC is an SEC registered investment advisor. ARK, Wolf Financial, and Public are separate, unaffiliated entities and do not have a relationship with respect to any company marketing or selling the products or services of the others. ARK, Wolf Financial, and Public make no representation or warranties regarding and expressly disclaim any responsibility or liability for any acts, omissions, losses, or damages of the other entities or their affiliates, officers, employees, or agents. No company shall be liable for any indirect, incidental, consequential, or special damages arising out of or in connection with this podcast or its contents. The information provided in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision and is subject to change without notice. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK, and investors should determine for themselves whether a particular investment management service is suitable for their investment needs. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK and or show guests and are not endorsements by ARK of any company or security or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in this show may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARK's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statement. ARK assumes no obligation to update any forward-looking information. ARK and its clients, as well as its related persons, may, but do not necessarily, have financial interests in securities or issuers that are discussed. Certain information was obtained from sources that ARK believes to be reliable. However, ARK does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information obtained from any third party.